I am Plant on the Line. This is thecommentary.ca. Rod McQueen joins me now, the National Book Award winner, best-selling author and journalist, has written a new book, Blackberry, The Inside Story of Research in Motion. With prodigious research and access to RIM's co-CEOs Mike Lazaridis and Jim Balsillie, we have a portrait of this Canadian success story and how its flagship product, the Blackberry, has become one of the most popular technology products in the world. Over 75 million smartphones have been sold worldwide. It's a useful, indispensable tool. It's also become, at times, a status symbol, thanks to celebrities being seen with them, and certainly a symbol of the era. Rod McQueen has written 12 books and joins me from Toronto this day. His website is rodmcqueen.com. The book is published by Key Porter. Incidentally, Balsillie and Lazaridis contribute the foreword. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Rod McQueen. Good morning, Mr. McQueen.
Good morning, Joe.
Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for your interest.
For me, I always wanted a BlackBerry, I guess for a few years now, and not because celebrities use it, but because it seemed to work for me. It had email, and you could do some of the internet stuff on it. It's become an indispensable part of my life, and I guess millions of people worldwide the same. Do you have a BlackBerry?
I sure do.
Yeah, which one do you have?
I've got the 8700. I've got old technology. Mine's about 5 years old, but it's a workhorse. I like the way the keyboard is. I'm looking at the new bold 9700. I like the look of it, and I'm sure I'll be upgrading soon.
Yeah. On your blog, you have a post there about all these media hits that you're doing across, not across the country. Well, I guess they're across the country.
Across the country, from Corner Brook, Newfoundland to Victoria.
What does it say to you when everyone seems to have one of these that you're talking to?
Well, I think there's a huge interest. I think there's a lot of pride as well. This is a great Canadian company. We haven't had that many global manufacturing firms based in Canada. You know, in the 143 years since Confederation, you can count them on one hand. Massey Ferguson in the 19th century, and in the 20th century, we've got Bombardier, obviously making aircraft, Bata shoes for a while, Magna in auto parts, and Nortel, which of course has gone bluey. And here's Research in Motion, the first one, and so far only, of the 21st century. 10 years ago, there was only 100 employees at their Waterloo, Ontario location, and now they've got 13,000 employees, two-thirds of them in Waterloo, and the rest spread across Canada and around the world.
And Canadians don't seem to know that it's Canadian sometimes, right?
Well, certainly that's the case. Imagine if we had 10 of these companies. Imagine if there were 10 companies like Research in Motion. I think we'd feel a whole lot different about ourselves. I think we'd feel the kind of pride that we did when Canada beat the U.S. at men's hockey in the Olympics.
Yeah. In terms of how you came to the subject, it just seems like a no-brainer. But I'm interested in how you work. How did you come to write about RIM?
Well, you mentioned that I've written a dozen books over the last 20, 25 years, and a lot of them have been about companies that ended up not doing very well. I did a book a few years ago on the Eatons, for example. As I called them, Canada's royal family, and of course that department store is no longer with us. I did a book about Confederation Life, which was seized by the government because they were just running too close to the line and looked like they might fail. I did a book about Edgar Bronfman Jr., and of course that whole Seagram empire, and he lost three-quarters of the family fortune. I thought it was about time I wrote about a success story. I was surprised how little had been written about Research in Motion, and I thought, well, hey, I'm in Toronto. It's just an hour up the road. Why not do Research in Motion? It was a long process. I spent more than 4 years on this book, which is twice as long as any other book I've ever done, and part of that was just gaining their trust and getting access to Mike Lazaridis and Jim Balsillie. They have lots on their plate, better things to do than sit down and tell the story. But at the end, they agreed, and I had good access there and did more than 100 interviews with people who work at Research in Motion, as well as others in the technology industry, to get an outside perspective on them and the company.
Now, there was another book in the fall, right?
That's right. There was a book a year ago on BlackBerry, but he didn't have any access to Research in Motion. It's a decent enough book, but it's all kind of secondary sources. He doesn't have any great anecdotes. Let me tell you one. When, of course, Mike Lazaridis founded the firm in 1984, they did a number of products before they finally got to BlackBerry. Jim Balsillie arrived in 1992. He invested $125,000 by a bit of severance pay from a job that he just left and increased his mortgage. And in return for that, he got a third of the interest in the company, so he became an owner. And 2 days later, he went to the accountant and said, you know, draw up a balance sheet. I'd like to get some sense of the positive impact that my money's had on the company. And the accountant said, well, it's all gone. And Jim said, what do you mean it's all gone? And the accountant said, well, we had all these pent-up payables, all these creditors that we owed, and we had to use your money to pay them all back. So it got off to a rocky start, but it's been onwards and upwards since then.
Yeah. Now, Lazaridis, what's he like?
He's a terrific guy. He's a classic immigrant story of Greek origins. He was born in Turkey, in Istanbul, and he came to Canada, to Windsor, Ontario, when he was 6 years old, and grew up there and in public school and high school. He and his friend Doug Fregan, who eventually was a co-founder with him of the firm, you know, won all the science fair projects. He read every book in the Windsor library system. By the time he was 12, all the books on science, they gave him an award when he read them all. And he and his friend Doug built a computer in high school. So that's the sort of inventive, brilliant mind he had all the way through his early years, and actually dropped out of the University of Waterloo with only 2 months left before graduation to launch Research in Motion.
And then you mentioned that Balsillie comes in 8 years later.
That's right, 1992. And it's a very interesting relationship they have. They're both chief executive officers, and that started the year after he joined, in 1993. So they've been doing this for 17 years. I don't know any other company in the world that has this sort of dual relationship, two bosses in effect. As Jim says, you know, they divide the duties right down the middle. Jim says, I raise the money and Mike spends it. Jim Balsillie looks after the business and finance side, and Mike Lazaridis looks after inventing the vision and the research and development. And they don't second-guess each other. They don't look over each other's shoulders. It's a real working relationship. Jim says, everything I know about technology I've learned from Mike. He says, I'm just a parrot, but I'm a very good parrot.
Yeah. Did you have opportunity to talk to the both of them together?
No, they were never in one place for long enough. I ended up interviewing them individually. Now that I think about it, that's a good question. I interviewed Mike, I guess half a dozen times, 2 to 3 hours each time. And as I mentioned, it went on over several years. And in the last interview, Mike Lazaridis said to me, he said, now, aren't you glad this has gone on for so long? Because when you started this process, we were just a niche product. Now we're the biggest in North America. And it's true, they've got the biggest market share of smartphones, as this area is called. That's because, you know, they do more than just a plain vanilla cell phone where you send and receive a call. You can obviously do emails and surf the web and download music and all manner of things.
And it's your sense of talking to each of them that they like the other?
Oh, yes. I think, you know, there's always rumors about, you know, how they're not getting along, or, you know, somebody would tend to be sort of, I don't know, people outside the company who are jealous, I think, because, you know, they've done very interesting things outside the firm. Obviously, Jim Balsillie has pursued his NHL team, and they've both become quite active corporate philanthropists. They've donated, between the two of them, about $400 million to various institutions that they've created in Waterloo. Governments have added money. Other donors have also contributed. But it's like $700 million into Waterloo in these new institutions that it's a huge change for the community of 100,000. But no, they get along. I think they're partners forever. There's no sense that they're, one of them is going to go off and try and do something different, or they're certainly not looking to sell the company, as all too many Canadian firms do. I mean, we've lost our steel industry, we've lost nickel, and all manner of people sold out to foreign companies, but not these two. I think they're in it for the long haul.
We mentioned the other book earlier from a year ago, from last year. What do you think it is that convinced them to talk to you?
Oh, well, I guess I'd like to think I made convincing arguments.
Yeah.
Maybe it was just persistence. There was a period of a year there when I would send them emails. I would send them stuff by courier. I sent them copies of books that I had previously done. I had found people who I knew, who I'd interviewed in the past, who knew them, and got these people to phone and send emails and say good things about me. You know, you do everything you can to make the case, and eventually they agreed.
Now, we all know the BlackBerry's use during September 11th, and you mentioned in the book that a lot of people would write letters in to Rim and to Mike and Jim about how consequential the device was during that time. Did you see some of those letters?
No, but I heard about them. They're not. Obviously they told me about the incident and these letters and how proud they were to be of help during 9/11. You know, the BlackBerry was one of the few communications devices that continued to work through that tragic situation. All of the phone lines were down. Everything was not working, but the BlackBerry continued on. They gave 1,000 BlackBerries to the search and rescue people to let them communicate better with each other. They also brought in special signaling equipment to see whether or not there was anybody, you know, buried and still alive who was trying to send a signal with their BlackBerry. But they're a bit, I guess they wanted to kind of keep a low profile on this issue. They didn't want to appear to be, taking some advantage from the fact that everything that they produced worked during this tragedy. So no, they weren't showing me those letters. They kept them private.
Yeah, was that the turning point for the BlackBerry itself, that people realized that it was more than just a phone?
I think it was one of the turning points. I think, but there was, when you start to go back and talk to people, there was all kinds of turning points. Another one came in 2003 when Oprah Winfrey, who had just got her first BlackBerry, held it up on the show and said, "This is one of my favorite things." And apparently you could see, sales in the U.S. just take a spike immediately after that. It was like the same as when she, announces that she enjoyed a particular book and sales of that take off. So there was various steps along the way. From 1999, when the first BlackBerry was launched, to 2004, they signed up 1 million subscribers, which obviously seemed like a huge number at the time, but now they're signing up 1 million subscribers every month. So, there's been a number of good things happened and new products and obviously innovation along the way to drive them to this current level of tops in the field.
And I guess when Obama was revealed to insist on using it,
wasn't that an amazing story? Yeah. I mean, he had used it during the campaign and fought tooth and nail with the Secret Service to keep it. And, they were concerned that he would. Anyway, they agreed, and he still got his BlackBerry. There it is in the White House.
How did the name BlackBerry come about? You tell that story in the book.
Oh, it's a wonderful story. They had done previous products. Their first email device was called Bullfrog because it was so big. It was the size of a double cheeseburger. And then the next one was Leapfrog. It was smaller, and that was the one immediately before BlackBerry. It was the size of a deck of cards. It was, down more into the size of today's. But they knew that they couldn't just, when they were launching their what they hoped would be the product for this company, they said, "We can't make up this name on our own." So they hired a firm called Lexicon in California, Sausalito, California, who has come up with other names, Pentium, for example, for Intel, and PowerBook for the Apple laptop. And it's interesting how they work. They put up big sheets of white butcher's paper on the walls in, you know, rooms. And they have three teams, anywhere between two and six people per team. And what they do is they just write names that they think might work on this paper. And some of them have actually seen the product. One particular group, they said, well, we're not going to show you the product. We just want you to come up with natural, flavorful, you know, names that might make you feel good when the odor comes up your nose, whatever. Just, and so one of the words that got written on the paper was strawberry. And somebody came through and they said, well, that's an interesting name, but the first syllable is too slow, strawberry, because he had seen the device. He knew what it was doing. It was in instant email. So they looked at the keys of the device and realized that they looked, you know, that they were black and they looked like seeds, and they said, well, let's call it blackberry. So that was one of the names that was put on the short list that went to Waterloo, and some of the other ones were Byline and Outrigger. There was a group within the company that liked Blade, B-L-A-D-E, until somebody entered that into the keyboard and on the internet, and it ended up in a porn site.
Yeah.
So they realized that wasn't a very good name. But it was Mike Lazaridis who said, BlackBerry, that's the one. And it was a hard sell inside the company because the engineers thought it was too frivolous, you know. It didn't really pay proper attention to the kind of work that they'd done on the software or on the architecture and the design. So, but obviously it's taken off. It's now one of the best-known brands in the world.
And you had access in Waterloo at the RIM place, right?
I did. I interviewed, you know, not just the top two, but other all the senior executives, and further down in the organization as well. For example, Gary Musso, who's got numerous patents, who was involved, just working away in the lab, inventing aspects of the BlackBerry as it's changed over the years. So yes, I was very fortunate and was able. And I also interviewed people at Intel in Arizona who were involved in making the chips for some of the early versions when they were getting the device smaller. Obviously, they needed more power without draining the battery. This was always Mike Lazaridis' concern. If you put too much inside, you drain the battery and you get 3 hours, and he wanted, you know, a couple of weeks of battery life. The other company that was important in the early going was Bell South, which was then a major carrier like the Rogers and Telus's of the world, and they were located in Atlanta, Georgia, and they placed the first major order with Research in Motion, $70 million in 1997 when they made that leapfrog, as it was known, the one just before BlackBerry. So you were talking earlier about big steps along the way. Boy, that was a big one as well, because that was just a huge order for what was then a tiny Canadian company, you know, just 100 people, and just beginning to get this product going to attract the attention of one of the big players in the U.S.
Yeah. Now, the culture in Waterloo, in the company there, is that a good one?
It is. It's very interesting. It's very open. It's not one of those hierarchies with lots of layers. Every 3 or 4 months, Mike Lazaridis brings in they hire about 1,000 new people a year, so they bring them in sort of 300 or 400 at a time. He speaks to them directly, talks about the history of the company, talks about his vision. Jim Balsley has a meeting every Monday morning when up to 120 people are either in the room or listening in, video conferencing in from around the world. They keep very close touch on the organization and the people in it, even as it's grown exponentially, so that everybody knows who the boss is. Everybody's seen the boss. You know, if they're on the sales side, they know Jim. If they're on the engineering side, they know Mike, and they know where the company's going. Obviously, everybody's got a BlackBerry, so they're able to communicate readily with each other. So it's very open, unlike any other culture that I've ever seen.
Now, the BlackBerry in the United States has 55% of the market share there, 21% worldwide. Has that held up in light of the iPhone?
Yes. Well, those are the most recent numbers, taking account of iPhone. I think iPhones, if you're right, 55%, it's certainly the majority. iPhones are somewhere in the 20s, and then the other, you know, companies are below that. Research in Motion, everybody keeps saying, oh, well, you know, somebody's going to come along with the BlackBerry killer. They've been saying that now for 10 years. I've got a list of products in my book, most of which you never heard of, that came and went, but all were supposed to be BlackBerry killers. Obviously, the iPhone is a competitor, but it's a very different device. It's all touch screen. It doesn't have the keyboard. Mike Lazaridis prefers the keyboard. He thinks that gives you the, you know, good tactile sense, and you're able to send a message more quickly. If people want the touch screen, he's got the Storm as a model that you can do that on. They're going to continue to innovate and come out with new models. They've got more than a dozen now, and they showed me lots of things and revealed many aspects to me, but they sure didn't tell me what was coming next. That's a secret, but, you know, from past experience, there's going to be two or three new models this year, and who knows what they'll look like or what they'll do, but I'm pretty sure they are going to have a keyboard.
And this focus on this sort of narrow focus, that's been the key to the company, and we can learn from that, right?
I think that's right. You know, they're not going to chase after Apple and say, well, we're going to do an iPad and we're going to do a laptop and we're going to do something else. They're going to focus on what they do well. And I think it's a good lesson for any company. Mike Lazaridis also says 5 years from now, the BlackBerry is going to replace the laptop. It's going to be able to do everything that your laptop does today. So why would they head off in different directions? It's a case of, you know, just continuing to innovate and improve what they now have. You know, in the last few years, they've extended themselves around the world in terms of the number of carriers in different countries. There's now more than 500 different carriers in 170 countries where, you know, that sell BlackBerry. And that means as a, you know, you can get on the plane in Vancouver and get off in 170 countries and your BlackBerry is going to work. I mean, I've got an electric razor that doesn't do that sometimes when I travel.
Did you have fun doing this book?
I did. It was a great story, and the people were fascinating. They had, you know, they've been pretty busy, and they didn't have time until now to tell their story, and I'm very happy that they chose to tell it to me.
What's next for you?
Oh, I thought I'd rest on my laurels for a couple of days, and then I'll... which is about all you can in this world, and then we'll see what's of interest yet. But I found the interest in this book very, very high. Lots of I've been in bookstores, you know, doing signings, and the people in that, not the sort of ones where they put your name up and say he'll be here at 7 o'clock at night. That's great if you're Bill Clinton or Larry King. You just go in and you sign, you know, 50 copies or whatever it is they've got, and out you go. But the people in the stores tell me that there's great demand and seems to be selling very well. Just came out last week. We'll see what happens.
Do you still live in Italy?
No. We had a great time there, but that was 2004, 2005. So we've been back since then. When we came back from Italy, that's when I started to work on this book.
Yeah, it's just a fascinating book, and I asked you if you enjoyed doing it, and it just seems, reading it, that you did. Congratulations on it. Continued good luck with it, Rod.
Well, thank you very much for having me on your show, Joe.
You're very welcome. The website for more is rodmcqueen.com, incidentally. The book is called BlackBerry, The Inside Story of Research in Motion. Key Porter Books is a publisher. In Toronto, Rod McQueen on the line. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Plato.